The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
When the Buddha looked out at the world, he saw that there's all kinds of ills in the world. You know, there's war, there's famine, there's drought, there's tsunamis, there's earthquakes, there's aging, illness, death, and there are the more day-to-day kinds of ills like frustration and irritation and anger and even just a feeling of offness, like, you know, just, shouldn't things feel a little different? Shouldn't they feel better? And in his exploration, this was really what he was curious about. Why do we suffer? What's going on here? What are we destined to suffer? Are we destined to have this feeling that things are just always not quite the way we'd like them to be? And some of those things, when he looked out at them, he recognized that having come into a human form, there are things that we're going to experience. Aging, illness, and death are going to happen. So he realized that it's not possible to not experience those kinds of ills. And so he was exploring and interested in understanding, what is it, how do we add to our ills? How do we end up struggling and suffering even more? He's interested in exploring that. And in that exploration, he actually found, in analyzing and exploring his own mind, because that's what he did, to answer this question of why do we suffer so much, he went in and explored in his own mind. How is it that I suffer? How is it that struggling, dissatisfaction, unease is created in this mind? And so he explored that, and in his understanding of that, in his recognition of how his mind created his own suffering, he saw actually that kind of struggle that we create in our own minds, the way our minds react to things, the way our minds don't want things to be the way they are, the way we want to push away things we don't like, the way we want to hold on to things that we like, endlessly arranging, trying to arrange the world to be the way we'd like it to be. That as he saw very deeply into that, he saw that actually when he found kind of the linchpin that put it all together, this wanting things to be different, when in his awakening, his enlightenment experience, he realized and recognized that that craving, that wanting things to be other than they are, could fall away. And then a deep sense of ease, of peace, of balance of mind arose for him. That, in fact, he could be at ease with the war, the famine, the drought. Not to simply sit back and say, you know, oh, there's war, I'm at ease with that. I mean, he actually put his body between two armies to try to stop a war. You know, so he took action. But the action that he took no longer came out of this sense of, you know, this sense that things have to change, that things are wrong or bad or but more out of compassion for the struggle, the suffering of humanity. That's why he took action. So that this understanding that he came to, a very radical transformation of his mind. And he puts it to us that it's possible for us also to transform our own minds, to learn to meet experience that's happening here in the present moment. What's happening here and now? What's happening now? What's already happening now? It's already here. It's already coming up. Resistance is futile. It's here already. And we spend a lot of time resisting what's already here. We spend a lot of time fighting against, craving it to be some other way than what is already happening. And that is the kind of the point at which the Buddha suggests this is how we can free ourselves. If we can actually become at ease with what is already happening, that ease, that open-hearted meeting of whatever is present in our experience will allow us to more skillfully step into the next moment, will allow us to more skillfully meet suffering, will allow us to be compassionate and balanced at the same time, as opposed to angry and aversive or greedy. So instead of having that kind of reactivity around what's happening in the present moment, an open heart, the mind with the open heart, the letting go of that wanting things to be different in this moment allows us with an open heart to meet, to resonate with what's happening, and to kind of more naturally and skillfully know how to respond rather than react. And so the Buddha was kind of like a physician. He looked out at the world, he looked into his own mind, and he discovered or found an illness of reactivity, essentially. An illness of the way we struggle with the way things are. And so he, in looking at that illness, he identified a cause for that illness. And that cause, he said, was this wanting things to be other than they are. This craving, the term that's used. And I've talked about this the last couple of weeks, this craving. And he said that with the ending of this craving, the ending of this wanting things to be other than they are, we are freed. Our hearts are at peace. And it's not in that, in our hearts being at peace in that way, that we then simply, you know, don't do anything. A heart at peace then resonates and responds to the world with compassion, with love, with balance of mind. And so I think this is often something that, you know, we so resonate and connect with this idea of wanting, you know, wanting to do things, wanting to have things, wanting to fix things or control things or engage, or, you know, wanting to stop things. And, you know, sometimes motivated both out of this aversion to what's happening. You know, I want to stop something. I don't like this. I want to stop it. But there's also a part of it that's a compassionate response. Part of it is the sense that, yeah, that, you know, there's so much suffering happening here. If I stop this, it will really help the suffering. And so the freeing ourselves from the craving doesn't mean that we stop acting. It means that we stop hating. We stop trying to hold on, so that we navigate the world with an open heart. And that open heart has a feeling of peacefulness. Feeling of peacefulness that I like to think of it as just resonating and responding to what's happening in ourselves and in the world. And this freeing ourselves, freeing from this craving, is what the Buddha points to as freedom, liberation. And he offered us tools and practices for helping ourselves to free ourselves of this craving. And so that's, I'd like to talk a little bit more tonight about this aspect of the Second Noble Truth, the craving, as the kind of the springboard, the cause of our struggles, from the small to the large. And that's really what the Buddha pointed to. He looked into his own mind and he saw the same process, this very same process that has me just feeling a little irritated at my partner is the same process that leads to war. And that if we can free ourselves from this, the world would be radically different. So the second noble truth, the truth of the cause of suffering, I've just explored actually in talking the four noble truths, the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the possibility of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And really those can be looked at as kind of like, you know, what a doctor would do. He'd diagnose the illness. Okay, yep, suffering, that's the illness. Look at the cause. Craving, that's the cause. The prognosis, is it possible to become well? Yes, the Buddha said it's possible. And then the prescription. What do we do? How do we engage? So I'd like to look a little bit more at the cause and explore how we can, with our with mindfulness and understanding, begin to look at some of the ways that our practice, our mindfulness practice, in our daily lives, in our sitting practice, but much in our daily lives, can help us to begin to understand, as the Buddha understood in his own mind, how we are, how our own minds are creating our own struggles. So that's kind of what I'd like to explore today. So first thing I'd like to just look at is the aspect of the Second Noble Truth saying, you know, so there's a cause of suffering. So this aspect of causality is really central in what the Buddha taught. He said, with respect to what happens in our minds, how we respond to things, how we go through our lives, it's a cause and effect process. Things don't happen randomly to us. There are events that happen in the world that may seem kind of random, although there is kind of, I mean, if we look at, like, you know, tsunamis are caused by earthquakes, which are caused by the shifting of the plates of the earth on top of each other. So, you know, things are caused, and our it may be that we're kind of just wandering through a landscape of things that are seemingly random to us, but our response to them, our reaction to them, is not so random. The fact that we, you know, just one silly example from my own life, you know, whenever I go into a room, or much of the time, for most of my life, when I went into a room kind of like this, where there's a speaker at the front of the room and a set of places to sit, I would sit in the front of the room. And, you know, this is, you know, there were some things like, stories I had about this, something like, you know, well, I'm really interested in what's going on. But in actuality, probably a large reason why I got put, I went to the front of the room was because when I was a kid, I was shorter than everybody else, and I had very bad eyes. The teachers always put me in the front row of the room. So, you know, that pattern just was created. So, you know, the way that we respond to our environment comes out of causes and conditions. So there's a process nature to our experience, an unfolding of experience. So in the Second Noble Truth, the Buddha said that our suffering, or the way that we struggle, again, from the small to the large, has to do with this craving, this wanting things to be other than they are, whether we want to have things or want to get rid of things. The sense of craving is around a feeling that I need to either have that thing or get rid of that thing in order to be happy. That my happiness, my well-being depends on having that thing or getting rid of that thing. That's the nature of this craving. So this craving to have things or get rid of things. Last week I talked about how that that craving and that belief, essentially, the very belief, the belief that I need to have that thing in order to be happy, or I need to get rid of that thing in order to be happy, that very belief is a fundamental misunderstanding. And I talked about that a lot last week, so I won't go into that too much this week. But what I do want to explore is how that fundamental misunderstanding kind of embeds our experience, and how we can begin to look at our experience and see a process at work, see how that our minds move from something, wanting something, seeing something that's pleasant, to liking it, to wanting it, to feeling like I have to have it. This process, this unfolding process, we can begin to watch and see how our minds do this and how our minds will create our struggle. And as I talked about last week, the exploration around, one of the explorations around craving is to try exploring what happens, what might happen if you simply, instead of acting on that craving, acting on that feeling of I have to have that thing or get rid of that thing in order to be happy, but instead just watch that wanting, watch that craving, observed it with mindfulness, turned away from the thing you want to have or get rid of and turned towards the feeling of the craving itself, at some point you'll see that wanting, even if only for a moment, will go away. And in that moment when that wanting goes away, there's no longer a problem around that thing that you thought you wanted or wanted to get rid of. So the craving being the cause of suffering, we can begin to witness actually that when craving goes away, when that wanting goes away, that there's no longer an issue. No longer a problem. If you think about some issue in your life, like, you know, some personal situation, you know, and you think about what it is that you want to happen in that situation, and all of the feelings of struggle and trying to maneuver around getting that thing or getting rid of that thing. Can you imagine for just a moment that wanting would go away, that there was just a sense of it was okay for that thing to be the way it was? Is there a problem anymore? Now, there may still be something to do. There may still be action to take. But again, our hearts don't have to feel contracted or closed. So one of the key places the Buddha pointed to this misunderstanding, a kind of an ignorance around our experience, is in particular around whether things are pleasant or unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant or neutral. There's a kind of a feeling tone to every aspect of our experience. And this is the place the Buddha pointed to. He said, you know, this is actually what we are wanting or wanting to get rid of. It's this feeling of pleasantness that we want more of. It's the feeling of unpleasantness that we want to get rid of. So he pointed to actually this feeling as being a really, as a crux, a point of kind of leaping off from feeling into this craving. It's like, there's pleasant experience. We want more of that. It's not just that we want it. We feel like we need more of that. That's what will make me happy, to have more of that pleasant feeling. There's an unpleasant experience. We think we need to get rid of that. And that was what will make me happy, to get rid of that unpleasant experience. So this, we often, in navigating our lives, we think we're responding and reacting to, things in the world. We think we're responding and reacting to what my partner said, or we think we're reacting to, the flavor of that food that we just put in our mouth. What the Buddha points to is actually that our reactivity, this leaping from experience into craving, actually the springboard of that is this feeling aspect of experience, this very simple aspect of experience that there's pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experience happening all through our day. Every single moment of experience has some feeling, tone, flavor to it. And not emotional here. I'm just talking about this really simple aspect of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So the Buddha actually, in his explanation of the Second Noble Truth, actually elaborated a very detailed set of cause and effect for how our suffering comes into existence. And this feeling, this aspect of feeling, plays a crucial role in that detailed teaching. I won't go into that detailed teaching today, but I'll just explain a little bit of it in kind of a schematic or rough way. So he said basically because we've got bodies and minds, there's a world out there. Those two pieces kind of come together at our sense doors. We are contacted, our sense doors are contacted with experience. And that contact, we set sights, we sounds, smells, taste, touch, and also stuff happening in the mind. Thoughts come up in the mind, and that's contacting the mind. Emotions come up in the mind, and that's contacting the mind. So just as the eye responds to sight, the ear responds to sound, the mind responds to thoughts, emotions, things like that. So the Buddha talked about six senses that we have, the five usual ones that we normally think of, seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and then the mind as being a sixth sense. And he said we have experiences that come into all of these senses, and every single experience has this flavor. It's either pleasant, it's unpleasant, or it's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Now, pleasant and unpleasant have a wide range to them. There can be mildly pleasant, mildly unpleasant, as in the flavor of, maybe a piece of chocolate has a kind of a lovely, pleasant taste to it. And then there are some other pleasures, Pick your favorite really great pleasure. So there's a range. There's a range of pleasant and unpleasant. It's not like three switches. It's a wide range, from intensely pleasant to mildly pleasant to mildly, from mildly unpleasant to intensely unpleasant. So based on that feeling, which every single sense contact has, based on that feeling, the typical response, because we have this misunderstanding about where and how happiness is found, our typical way of dealing with pleasant is to have more of it. To like it, to want it, to hold on to it. A typical response to unpleasant, to want to get rid of it. This is very natural, very normal response. In fact, you can see it evolutionarily. Amoebas put into a broth of food on one side and noxious chemical on the other side are going to head towards the food. They're going to head towards the pleasant, away from the unpleasant. So it's a very natural kind of movement to go from pleasant experience towards the pleasant, to go from unpleasant to to try to get rid of. That's very natural, very normal kind of movement. So from that pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral experience, it very naturally leads us into liking, wanting, and further on into craving, feeling like I need this for my well-being. So that it's no longer simply, you know, oh, there's pleasant experience happening. It's I need that pleasant experience. I have to have more of that pleasant experience. So this is how the Buddha described the cycle, essentially, that we are in our world responding to pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And without having a sense of clarity in our minds, we are simply reacting to pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, wanting more pleasant, wanting to get rid of unpleasant, which then leads us into this kind of cycle of having to have more of what we want, having to get rid of what we don't want. This cycle which leads us to suffering, because in having those things, you know, the part of the misunderstanding is that, okay, if I have that thing, I'll be happy. But that happiness of that having is so brief. It's so fleeting, because things are impermanent. And even things that last a while, you know, the actual joy that we take in them quickly wears off. And so we find ourselves in a space of, well, gosh, things are okay, but, you know, it really felt better when I was flooded with all that pleasant experience. So how can I find more of that? And we think that there's a problem. We think there's something wrong, like there's a, you know, that we're doing something wrong, or that we're being gypped or mistreated somehow if we're not in a space of being able to have more pleasant and get rid of the unpleasant. And the Buddha pointed out, you know, it's just the way things are. Some things are going to be pleasant, some things are going to be unpleasant. It's a flow of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. If your mind can be balanced around that, there will be a lot more ease in your life, as opposed to trying to endlessly. It's kind of like a, you know, a squirrel in a squirrel cage, or a gerbil, you know, those gerbil on those wheels. You know, they're running on this wheel, trying to just... It's kind of like that. We're just in this endless trying to maneuver our lives to construct what we think might be happiness. And then we have a moment of that, and then it falls apart. And we mourn that, we feel bad about that, and we think, okay, how do I get back? More pleasant, get rid of the unpleasant. And we're on this cycle. We're just on this cycle. And as I mentioned last week, the Buddha proposed if we can just let go of the wanting, it kind of takes us out of that cycle. So this place of feeling tone within this cycle, it's this, it's actually like the springboard, that when we don't see our experience in terms of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, when we don't see the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of experience clearly with mindfulness, we're just going to be off responding to our pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral sensations with our habitual tendencies. Averse, you know, having the aversion of the unpleasant, wanting to get rid of, to fix it, to change it. Now again, you can meet unpleasant experience without aversion and still take action to do something out of compassion for yourself or others. You know, if you're in a building and you smell smoke, you know, you're not just going to sit there and smoke. Oh, that's unpleasant. You know, you're going to take action. It doesn't have to be that you hate the fire. You just take the action to move yourself out of that situation, out of compassion for yourself. So I really like to stress this, because so often when when we explore these teachings around letting go of wanting, people think, well, if I don't want something, how would I ever do anything? How would I ever act? And we think this, I think, partly because it's the main way that we've engaged with the world in terms of doing, is to want something and to do it. And we've not seen the possibility of engaging in action. And there's a kind of a wanting to act in compassion, but it's not got that neediness to it. It's not got that demand that it be a certain way. So this, I want to talk more about the feeling tonight. This is really the piece I want to explore most tonight, is how to use an exploration around feeling to help us to understand this cycle, you know, to help us to understand how our reactivity is born. Because when we start to really observe our experience, turn towards our experience with mindfulness, and begin to look at how am I responding? What's going on? We'll start to see, we can start to see that there is the experience of pleasant arises, the experience of unpleasant arises, and very quickly we do respond with liking, with wanting, with needing, with grasping. And we can begin to just get interested, it's possible to get interested in this flow of pleasant and unpleasant and neutral. And just kind of highlight this for ourselves. What is happening right now? You know, what's going on right now? Oh, there's pleasant experience. There's unpleasant experience. So feeling being a link leading, kind of the springboard. We leap off of feeling into liking, wanting, needing, craving. If we can begin to explore feeling with mindfulness, the Buddha points that to us that this is a place where we can actually, when we bring mindfulness to feeling, it brings in some degree of awareness at that level. And as I was talking last week, you know, that when we're not aware, when we're ignorant, when we're not conscious of what's going on in our lives, we'll just respond in a kind of habitual way. So if we're not aware that something pleasant is happening, we'll just act in our habitual way of trying to get more of it. If we're not aware that something's unpleasant, we'll act in our habitual way of aversion and trying to get rid of it. So bringing mindfulness to the feeling tone brings in some awareness, which helps us to unmask or uncover how we react to pleasant and unpleasant. And we can begin to see this process of reactivity being born. We get to see in our own minds how we react to our experience rather than open-heartedly meeting our experience. So we begin to see this process of reactivity being born. And this is an important process because we start to see actually that, and it takes time to see this, but we can start to see that there's the feeling experience. There's something pleasant, there's something unpleasant. And there is the movement towards liking, wanting, needing. But it is not hardwired. It is not like there's no way to break the link between feeling and craving. There's a little space between the experience of feeling and the movement into the reactivity to feeling. There's a little space there. And if we can actually see, oh, there's pleasant experience happening right now, we begin to see that space. We might begin to see that there's a little bit of space in which to just recognize, okay, that's pleasant experience, that's unpleasant experience. And we also might get to see our minds immediately leap into the reactivity, which I'll talk about that in just a minute. So right now I'd like to talk a little bit about what it means to get familiar with this feeling. How do we get familiar with this? What does it mean to pay attention to this? It's actually, you know, it happens to us. It's actually pretty clear once we start exploring this aspect of our experience, this pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of our experience. It's pretty obvious to us once we start taking note of it. You know, you eat ice cream and it's like, yeah, pleasant, that's pretty obvious. You know, we don't actually often think about it or recognize it as there's the pleasantness, the pleasant aspect there. If we walk into the edge of our desk and bruise our leg, there's unpleasantness. You know, we feel that. There's an unpleasant experience. Typically, we react to that unpleasantness so quickly by having reactivity arise, you know, anger, not paying attention to where we were walking or something. So we react so quickly that we don't actually recognize, oh, there's unpleasant experience. Now, maybe it sounds like, you know, how could you walk into a piece of furniture and just go, oh, unpleasant. Wow. It's possible. It actually is possible. So the easiest place to start getting familiar with feeling tone, with this feeling aspect of experience, is in our physical body. Taste, sight, smell. The touch sense actually is really the easiest place. The touch sense of our bodies is really highly tuned to pleasant and unpleasant in particular. So, you know, you can just explore your experience, like right now in your experience. Is there some aspect in your body, you know, maybe just something like simple, like the sensations of your lips touching together? Is that pleasant or unpleasant? The sensation of your contact with of your body with the chair or cushion or bench. Is there unpleasant or pleasant? A mixture? Some parts pleasant, some parts unpleasant? In my own experience of that, there's a little bit of mildly unpleasant where my sits bones are contacting the cushion. But much of it is more, there's a feeling of softness that's got a kind of a pleasant quality to where my body's contacting the cushion. So every experience has this quality of pleasant or unpleasant. We can get attuned to this and beginning to explore it in our sitting practice, in our daily lives, just exploring pleasant, unpleasant, what's going on, you know? Just attuning yourself to this aspect. You know, eating is a really great place to explore this. I'd like to encourage that because the taste, you know, the taste receptors, I think, are attuned to pleasant and unpleasant particularly. So we, you know, putting food in our mouth, is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? And then noticing, too, you know, you put like an orange in your mouth, a bite of orange, and start chewing it. And notice, when does the flavor actually come? When does the pleasantness come? How long does the pleasantness last? Or is there unpleasantness in there? Maybe it's a really cold orange and it gets your teeth, you know, it hurts your teeth so that it's so cold. So maybe there's some unpleasantness there. And again, how long does that unpleasantness last? So exploring in your daily lives this notion of pleasant, unpleasant in your physical experience. There's also feeling related to what happens in our minds. So certain emotions, for example, happiness feels pleasant. Anger usually feels unpleasant. Frustration feels unpleasant. Joy feels pleasant. Love feels pleasant. So you can explore your emotions as well in this way. You know, what's pleasant? What's unpleasant? Thoughts also can produce feelings, feeling tone, beliefs, ideas. Often it comes into play with respect to an emotion that's created around a thought. So, for example, the thought that you walk into a room and you see somebody across the room and your immediate thinking is, oh, that person doesn't like me. You know, so there's that thought in your mind. And that thought creates a feeling, and that feeling might be unpleasant. So thoughts and feelings, thoughts can produce feelings. And I actually think that thoughts, ideas, beliefs are really a leading cause of how we feel about that, how our feelings are, what we notice about our feelings, let's say. So let's say, for instance, you have this belief that you don't like washing dishes. And that, you know, that idea, I don't like washing dishes, you know, that idea creates a kind of a tone in your mind of unpleasantness around the idea of washing dishes. And then you go to wash the dishes, and what you notice is how your back hurts, and, you know, you notice all the unpleasantness of it, and you're thinking about all the other things you could be doing instead of washing the dishes. And so the mind is kind of put into this space of, I don't like washing dishes, and it's kind of attuned to proving that to yourself, you know? Okay, yep, this is unpleasant, and it's proving to itself, it's proving it to us. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's unpleasant. If you actually, instead of, you know, going into an experience with that kind of idea or belief in mind, or just noticing, okay, yep, I've got that belief, that idea. Oh, that's a thought. I don't like washing dishes. Okay, that thought's there. And then you actually experience the dishwashing. You might find that there's quite a bit of pleasantness in there as well. You know, this, the warm sensations of the water, that's a pleasant feeling. The way the sponge slides smoothly over the dish might be a pleasant feeling. So the way that we relate to our world through thought has a big impact on how we feel things, on that, whether we're kind of attuned to feeling pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. So I think much of what we experience as pleasant and unpleasant actually comes from ideas in our minds about what's pleasant and unpleasant. And so this is an interesting place to explore. When you're reacting to something, when you are finding yourself not liking something or wanting to have something, you know, well, let's talk just now about not liking something. You know, if you find something that you want to get rid of, that there's something unpleasant in your experience, what actually are you reacting to? Can you find what you're actually reacting to? This kind of an exploration can be really interesting. On one retreat, I was doing walking meditation, and a person came up, and it was in a hall where, you know, there were a bunch of people doing walking meditation together in the hall, kind of like out there. You know, we sometimes do walking meditation out there, and there's a bunch of people walking back and forth together. And so there were, you know, we were kind of squeezed in, and somebody else came into the room and kind of slipped in between me and the person next to me. So we all had to kind of squish over a little bit more. And I felt this rush of aversion, this rush of reactivity. And so I began exploring. It's like, okay, there's aversion. And one of the things that one of my teachers had mentioned in a Dharma talk recently, before that evening, was if there's aversion happening, there's something unpleasant in your experience. And so I was curious, okay, so what is actually unpleasant here? And I began exploring in my experience. I explored all my senses. It's like seeing. Is it the seeing that's unpleasant? And looking at this, and this is doing walking meditation back and forth. You know, it's like, well, seeing, you know, the person isn't, you know, doesn't look unusual in any way. And, you know, it's like, the sights, it's pretty okay, you know. So I ruled out seeing as the source of my reactivity. And nobody was speaking, so it was quiet. So it wasn't like you know, there were all kinds of creaking floorboards or something that I was reacting to. So, wasn't hearing. Person didn't have a smell, so wasn't smelling. They weren't rubbing up against me, so it wasn't about touch. It wasn't about taste. So I ruled out all my physical senses. It's like, okay, there must be something going on in the mind. And I hadn't seen anything in particular. I had seen the aversion, but I hadn't seen what the aversion was really about. And I just did some more walking. It's like, there must be something in the mind, some kind of thought, you know, somewhere. And going back and forth, at some point, the mind produced this thought. He's weird. This person that had slipped in. He's weird. And I could see there was a little bit of, just a little bit of fear around that feeling of he's weird. And so this was clearly, it was clear to me that this is where, this was where the reactivity, the aversion was coming from. And then, continuing doing the back and forth walking, my mind produced this next thought, which was something like, it's freezing cold outside and he's in bare feet. And this was my justification for weirdness. And when I saw that, you know, when I saw that this was how my mind had put this together, the whole structure of that aversion collapsed. And in the next moment, I was feeling kindness and metta towards this person. Just this, an open-hearted feeling. So this exploration around pleasant, unpleasant, neutral can be very interesting. If you find yourself reactive and not particularly having noticed, I mean, at times we can kind of attune ourselves to the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral quality of things. And then we might see this reactivity being born in the first place. I didn't see that. You know, I didn't see that from the beginning. But what I did see was the aversion, and then I got interested in exploring, well, what am I actually averse to here? What is actually this reactivity springing from? That was the exploration. And that can be a very interesting exploration in seeing where is it? Where is the unpleasantness? For me, there was the unpleasantness that was created around the fear. There was unpleasantness around the fear because my mind had created this belief this person was weird. And then, when I saw how that belief was created, it just collapsed. So it's also helpful in terms of exploring reactivity to physical experience, because often we do react to physical experience. You know, we like run into the edge of the desk and bruise ourselves or something. You know, so there's that physical, there's the actual physical unpleasantness of that, and then there's the unpleasantness that comes up when we berate ourselves. I cut my finger at one point, you know, and, you know, I was on retreat, and actually my mind was pretty present, so it didn't spin out into reactivity. You know, it was just like, oh, look at that. And, you know, I tried to stop the blood, and I went next door, and I knocked on my neighbor's door. I needed to go to the emergency room because I knew I needed stitches. So I was doing a self-retreat at home, and I had been cutting an apple, and my doctor's response was, you were meditating with a knife in your hand. But I went to my neighbor's, knocked on the door, and I said, you know, I've really cut my finger badly, and I think I need to go to the emergency room. And she said, don't panic! It's like, I don't think I'm panicking here. So, you know, it's possible to actually not be reactive, but it would be very easy had I not been on retreat. You know, suppose that had happened right before I had to come here to give a Dharma talk. You know, I can just imagine my mind going, I don't have time for this. I don't have time to go to the emergency room. You know, what am I going to do? Who am I going to call? You know, the mind would have spun out into all kinds of reactivity, whereas, you know, it's just the pain and the throbbing and the pressure and the aching of the cut. And then there's all of this other stuff we add to it when we have physical pain. You know, an itch is a great place to explore this. If you have an itch, you know, the itch is an unpleasant experience. And then there's the mind, how the mind goes nuts with that itch. Really interesting to explore. What's the actual unpleasantness of the itch and how much of it is in our mind? And this is really where the Buddha points to how much of our suffering is created in our minds, in the reactivity. And that reactivity is itself unpleasant, which compounds our struggles. We don't like that unpleasant. We need to figure out how to get rid of that unpleasant. So exploring this aspect of feeling as a really powerful tool, you know, both seeing it perhaps as a part of your day, familiarizing yourself with pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral in your day, and then as you explore the ways and times that you react, asking yourself the question, and what is it that I'm actually reacting to here? What's unpleasant in my experience? What's pleasant in my experience? So we've got just a couple of minutes if there's any comments or questions or thoughts about anything I've said. Yeah, back in the back.
Okay, so pleasant and unpleasant, you say there's a wide spectrum, and then neither
pleasant nor unpleasant.
Is that like one thing?
Well, you know, the neither pleasant nor unpleasant has different ranges to it, but it's interesting. You know, there's the kind of sense of something being neutral or neither pleasant nor unpleasant where it doesn't have much feeling or much, there's not, it's like, it's almost like it's so subtle it's hard to touch into. So it can have that quality of, you know, just hard to really connect with almost because it doesn't have much in the way of sensation at all. That can be kind of neutral. You know, the Buddha actually described that, or not the Buddha, but the commentaries say that much of our sense experience is actually quite neutral. You know, if we think about sight, for instance, the way sight works, there's just form and color out there. And at that level of form and color, it's pretty neutral. It's when we put our ideas on top of it, for instance, you know, this is a rose, that's beautiful, that's pleasant. This is a decaying corpse, that's ugly, that's unpleasant. You know, that when we identify it or perceive it as something, that it then becomes pleasant or unpleasant. So there's kind of a neutrality that we can touch into around some of our senses, and that it kind of has a sense of not having a lot of almost like there's not much in the way of contact. It's like soft contact can feel neutral. And yet there are times when I've had the experience, a very, very strong experience, and the way my mind related to it was, I mean, it wasn't that my mind said, oh, that's neutral. I mean, that kind of soft experience of, you know, almost soft contact, that we can kind of call neutral. But this experience, where there was a very strong experience, my mind said, well, that's not pleasant, but it's not unpleasant either. So it can have some different qualities to it. There's a story I heard about somebody who survived the collapse of the World Trade Centers. He was in the stairway the stairwell when the building collapsed, and you know, he ended up in a free fall for quite a long way with all of the rubble around him, and I guess he landed free of the building. And he described his experience as, it wasn't pleasant, but neither was it unpleasant. You know, so that's a very evocative image for me, you know, that, you know, being in a collapsing building, conscious in that collapse and having the experience of it. You wouldn't say that was exactly neutral, you know. Probably pretty strong experiences there, but neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So just explore it for yourself. Just explore what would you call neither pleasant nor unpleasant? And I like that framing of it. That's actually how the Buddha framed it in the discourses. He said, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. He didn't use the word neutral. That's the way that the Western language has picked it up. So for me, I found that some actually what seemed to be pretty strong sensation can actually have that neither pleasant nor unpleasant quality. And now it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention. And next time I'm going to talk about yet another way to kind of explore through mindfulness ways that we leap into this kind of reactivity, hidden ways that are kind of hidden from us. So I'll continue this a little bit next week.